100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day off and 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, it's Digital Sister, and I'm back with episode 58. Can you believe I just have two more, and I will have done 60 podcasts since about October 2005. So that's pretty cool. I'm very excited about it. Hello to my fans in China, to my fans in Damascus, in the Kansas area, and all across the United States. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you passing the podcast around and keeping the podcast flowing and growing. Let me start with Virginia Tech. I mean, what is going on? How do we stop the madness? It just blew me away to see this horrible story that we keep seeing these shootings happening in schools and colleges over and over again. And I had no idea that Nikki Giovanni was a professor at Virginia Tech, and it's been very interesting that she's been interviewed and given her insight, and she spoke at the memorial for the slain students and faculty of this tragedy. And I guess what I found very interesting was how the newscasters were trying to not trying to pin any situations on people who tried to intervene with the student. The student, his name is Cho Sung, I think Hui, H-U-I, I don't know how to pronounce that correctly. But in any event, you know, professor saw he was disturbed and they interceded and referred him to counseling and things like that. And I kind of took umbrage with some of the newscasters who were trying to really press, I think, Nikki Giovanni and the professor. I have to look through my notes to see exactly what her name is again. It might be Carolyn Root. I'm not really sure. But, you know, I kind of took umbrage with the fact that they were trying to say, was there anything more you could have done? Is there anything, you know, that you could have done? You know, it's always in hindsight. And Nikki Giovanni said, and the professor said, the university is a hierarchy. If you see something unusual, you report it to counseling and pass it on and let the higher-ups and people do what they need to do. But in this situation, it doesn't seem like that happened. It seems like the ball was dropped all along the way. To have a student there who obviously indicated some signs of disturbance, and he was not, you know, expelled. I don't understand. I'm guessing if there were other students like that, they would have no hesitation in getting them off the campus. So I think this situation, I think the whole thing with Don Imus, even though they're two separate things, I think it's really making people look at situations and look how different groups are treated. You know, it's just very interesting to me. And another thing I found interesting, Blacksburg, Virginia, I've never been there, but apparently it seems to be very kind of rural, you know, Virginia, rolling hills, things like that. So they were really freaking out that this kind of thing could happen in this, you know, privileged little area. And I'm thinking to myself, here are the news cameras coming and everybody's trying to figure out how this could have happened, how they could have stopped it, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm thinking, you know, there's plenty of communities, probably not too far from Blacksburg, where violence and shootings happen all the time in the schools and they don't get any kind of press coverage. And if they happen to happen in communities of color, you know, there's not a team of grief counselors coming in to deal with the situation. You know, President Bush isn't doing the photo op to come and be there. So I think perhaps with it happening there, maybe it's going to make people look at violence across the board and what is happening too often in this country that we need to look at. And I didn't know that Virginia is probably one of the second states where it's very easy to get a gun. And so I think we have to look at a lot of things. You know, it's just very, very sad. It's really just very sad that, you know, you go to college to learn and you almost now have to carry your own bulletproof vest to go. It's really very disturbing and very sad. And there's just so many questions, I think. You know, there's that 2-hour gap where the shooting was happening, but students weren't notified from the school. And I think there's just going to be a whole lot of fallout once the investigations happen to see just what happened. There's going to be a big blame game and passing blame around, et cetera, et cetera. But the bottom line is, I think as a country, we need to look at why we are not funding more mental health facilities and why mental health, as Dr. David Satcher, and I have talked about this in previous podcasts, why are we not funding mental health facilities and making mental health a priority to get people the help that they need and the insurance coverage that they need to go deal with some of these issues. Clearly this young man was disturbed. Clearly there were signs. You know, I don't know because I'm not there, but somebody somewhere maybe could have done something just a little bit more to deal with this kid. And really, if he's that disturbed, sometimes there's really not much you can do, because when they are intent on doing this kind of damage, there isn't much you can do to prevent it. And clearly he'd been planning this and thought about this for a while. And yes, it was masked in this domestic dispute because I guess his girlfriend broke up with him, and he came to her and told her to identify who the new boyfriend was, and since she did not do that, that's when he lined up a lot of the male students and just execution style killed them. A lot of students had injuries from jumping out of the windows to get away from this. And so I think there's going to be some issues to deal with. And really, you know, it may not, because it's happened again. And then there's a big uproar in the news, and we all freak out and we all shake our heads and we all wonder if something more could be done. But we've got to wake up in this country and start dealing with the issues of the easy access to get handguns. I mean, that's what the Brady Law was all about. Putting some delays in so that the wrong people are not able to even get the weapons. And we've got to look at why we are not funding mental health facilities. Why are we closing and have closed mental health hospitals and things like that? We clearly are a country that has a big health, public health problem with mental illness, and mental illness that takes the form of violence. And I've said this in so many podcasts before, you know, with my social work training. We have too many people that are engulfed in private mental hells who decide, for whatever reason, not to deal with their issues one-on-one with a trained psychiatrist, counselor, whomever, but they decide to take it upon themselves and to do it with guns to deal with things. That is the problem. People with private pain who take out their private pain in public places and hurt and kill people that have nothing to do with their private pain. The private pain is your issue, and you have to deal with your issue. And that is what is not happening in this country too often. People are not dealing with their own issues. They are taking a quick solution, which is a gun, and it just destroys so many lives and wrecks so much havoc that is what we are left with. And that is what we've got to address. Because this is going to be in the news for a little while, and then it's going to die down until the next shooting. It's just horrible, and we've got to start addressing it. And I was kind of like Yes, it's nice that the president showed up. He and Mrs. Bush showed up to show their condolences and support for this whole thing. But I have to wonder, is anybody tapping President Bush on his shoulder and saying, hey, maybe we could be taking that $5 billion a month that's going over to Iraq in a bottomless well of absolute craziness over there? Couldn't we just keep $1 billion here a month and start dealing with some of the mental health issues and bring back some mental health facilities so that people can get help and actually deal with their own problems and not decide that the only way to deal with it is to get a gun and go into a public place and blow everybody to smithereens? I mean, we as a country have to take a stand, and we've got to do something more than just wring our hands and talk about what could have happened in hindsight. We've got to be really proactive about what's going on, what's taking over the mindsets of our young people and some of the older people who, again, have private pain and decide to take out that private pain in a public place. It's got to stop, because one day it's going to creep into the place where we are, and we're going to be standing in the same situation wondering what could have happened, could it have been prevented, whatever. Let's stop this before another horrible situation comes up. And in the paper, they're actually saying that there were some 10 reports of violence in other schools. And so not only do you have that craziness, but you have the craziness of people who are trying to be copycat perpetrators because of all the media attention. And so what we've got to look at is why people are so starved today for that media attention, and they'll do practically anything to get it. I mean, we've got to wake up as a country, because it's just getting really crazy and really quite frightening. So our condolences go out to the families, to the students, to the faculty, and I have to say even to the parents of the gunmen, because their lives are going to be turned upside down and their lives are going to become hell too. So it's just a really horrible tragedy, and our condolences go out to everyone who was involved in that and touched by that in some way. Let me talk a little bit more about the whole Don Imus flap. There's a very intelligent article in Newsweek, and I have to say it's probably the first time I've ever seen black women on the cover of Newsweek, because they have the Rutgers team placed on top, at the top of the magazine. It's very interesting, very provocative, and I think very very realistic about what they talk about and the issues that are there. And basically, you know, he thought he was just going to have another day at the race making these comments in his show, and it just seemed to just snowball very quickly. Once NBC dropped him, then with MSNBC, then CBS came around. It took a little time, and it took some courage, because I, quite frankly, was surprised that he was canceled. I really thought it was just going to be that 2-week suspension, and that there would be a little slap on the wrist, and that everything would go back to, quote, normal. I didn't think it would happen this way, because I figured the powers that be would just kind of, you know, say the right things for the moment, but just let it continue. But I was very happily surprised that it went further. And I think with a lot of people, that pretty much capped the situation was looking at the team and the poise and the graciousness of these very intelligent women who were in an Ivy League school, you know, there. And that is what I think turned the tide. They, you know, showed grace and dignity during a very tough time. And I think people with intelligence had to realize that, these were not, they did not deserve the description that Don Imus gave them. It was totally, totally far from that vision. And so once the team had their newscast and the world saw how gracious, how intelligent, how and how this really stole their moment. You know, I think that was what kind of did him in, and the fact that some major sponsors started jumping ship. And so I'm surprised that it happened, quite frankly, because I didn't think it was going to happen. And I think if the networks are serious about taking a different outlook and making something positive from this, you know, maybe they will start looking around in their newsrooms, you know, and see why there is no real diversity in the newsroom. And maybe make some changes. I heard on today on Tom Joyner that MSNBC gave him a call, probably wants him to come over and do a little test run to see if he perhaps is the one who can fill that slot. But I think it's a wake-up call, and I said this before when Ed Bradley died and how the CBS management was saying it was going to take some time. Yeah, it's going to take some time because you don't have anybody, and you probably haven't had any kinds of programs or ways to identify promising minority African-American journalists who could possibly be hired and groomed to be an active journalist within that news organization. So I think what has to happen, and it may not happen, is, yeah, they may make an overture to Tom Joyner, but let's look at the talk industry as a whole. I mean, in the Newsweek article, I'm looking at who are the people that have talk shows, who have the great numbers and all that, and every single one of them is white. There's two women on there, Laura Schlesinger, Laura Ingraham. The rest are white males. And there's a Stephanie Miller who's liberal, but she's coming. But that is who gets the positions to have these talk shows. You don't see other people of color being offered these talk shows. And so you see, you have to look at that whole dynamic. If you aren't even given an opportunity to have one, it doesn't bring diversity to the airwaves. And when you go into these newsrooms, you rarely see anybody of color. You see? So it's going to be a tough situation. I think CBS has to look at themselves, NBC, MSNBC. They're going to have to really look at what is there. And what is there is just a bastion of white males in media who basically feel they can do and say whatever they want. And when they get checked, they are never racist. They're just making a joke. Something that was taken out of context. You know, I'm not a bad person. I'm really a good person because, you know, I do have a black friend, or I do have a ranch, and, you know, 10% of those kids are black. I mean, come on. Let's really get down to the truth here. And so that's what's going to have to happen. I mean, I got a call from Talkers Magazine, you know, wanting me to advertise in there. And I'm thinking, why would I want to advertise in there? There's nothing that relates to me. It's all white, you know? It's all white talk show hosts. So what is in there for me? I mean, and that's why TV One and Radio One, owned by Kathy Hughes, started Syndication One, because there was a need to hear another perspective on the airwaves that you are not going to get from the major news vehicles. And so that's why there has to be like that. So it's very interesting, but I encourage you to get the Newsweek articles. It's very intelligent and very interesting. Now, USA Today, let me see, what issue was that? This was, today's paper, as a matter of fact. And what they show is that they did a poll, and they say most people think that the handling of Don Imus was too harsh. Some 46% said that he should, let's see, let me get this right. Yeah, that 46% say that it was too harsh. And let's see, 9% say he should have been suspended. And there's about 38% they say that no action should have been taken. So for the most part, And it's not by a real large margin, but for the most part, the majority of people out there think he got a raw deal. Now, that's very interesting, because what it says to me is that we also have to look at what we feel about African-American women. Is it okay? Is that the larger societal view of what people think about African-American women? And again, I go back to what I say in so many podcasts about empathy. If we turn this around, if we call a certain group a particular derogatory name, it's going to be all over the news. People are going to be just so appalled. And see, but why is it okay that African-American women can be called this? And I think that's the larger issue. And even the day after he was pulled off, there was a radio station in California who continued to air his show and just, you know, thumb their nose at CBS. And so you're always going to have those detractors, you know, those who are going to say, oh, it was no big deal, no big deal. But again, if we walk in somebody else's shoes and there's somebody picking on your particular ethnic group, you're not going to like it. You're going to get into an uproar and demand him be off the air. So why is it that it's okay to refer to African American women that way? Why is it okay? And that's what we really have to look at. And also through this whole flap that I'm going to move on is I saw Reverend Al Sharpton standing up, I saw Jesse Jackson standing up, but I didn't see, and maybe they didn't get the news pressed, I don't know, but I didn't really see any NBA players standing up and saying, hey, this isn't that cool. I didn't see it. I didn't see too many other black preachers standing up and saying something about that and getting on the airwaves to talk about it. I didn't hear it, okay? I did hear those three guys really just letting people have it, you know, and they stood up for it. But I didn't hear a lot from other groups, and that tells me a lot, too. We got to change that. We got to change how we're viewing particular groups, you know. It's just not cool. And remember, NBA stars, entertainers, when somebody like Don Imus says something like that, by implication, it talks about a whole group. And if he's thinking that about women, I'm wondering how he feels about some of you NBA players. He's probably thinking the same thing about you. And so we need to step up and say something and put people in check when it's not cool, especially when it's on the airwaves, which is public and supposedly regulated. So people have to step up and say something about that. But it's been a very interesting week. I think people are skittish. You know, I'll give you a perfect example. I was in the hospital visiting my dad, and he was asking me, he didn't quite hear the words that Don Imus said. And so he said, I didn't quite hear what he said. He said, well, what did he say? So I told him what he said. He said, oh, my goodness. But the funny thing was there was a doctor with some residents who were going to come into the room. And just as I was telling my dad what he called them, you know, what he said, nappy-headed hoes, just as I said that, the doctor walked in. He heard that. He turned and walked out. It was almost as if he said, I can't deal with this today. But me and my dad just really cracked up. But it was just so funny, the timing issue of the whole thing. But, you know, I think if we're smart, we'll talk about it and we'll look at ourselves and think that it's not okay, because nobody else would like it if you were called out of your name like that. So let's be real about that. The other thing with this whole flap that has been very interesting is how it went from just strictly Don Imus to trying to bring in the whole rap industry. And they had nothing to do with each other. I mean, this stuff came out of one man's mouth at that time. And, you know, then they tried to bring in the whole issue of the hip-hop community and this and that. But, you know, those two issues were separate things. They're two separate things. And so that's how we have to be careful that the issues don't get muted. That is for sure. And what is happening is I think Russell Simmons has gotten in on it, and kind of like everybody's gotten in on it. And he got kind of ticked off with Senator Barack Obama, who basically said, you know, that we have to admit it's not the first time we've heard it. Turn on the radio. There are lots of songs that use the same language. We've been permitting it in our homes and in our schools and on iPods. And so Obama goes on to say, if it's not good for Don Imus, I don't know why it's good for us. If we don't like other people to degrade us, why are we degrading ourselves? Good point. And then I think interesting that Russell Simmons would come out and say that Obama, Senator Obama, is flat wrong, comparing Imus's comments to those heard in rap music. With Simmons saying, you know, people coming from that background, we got to talk about the conditions, yada, yada, yada. But of course he's going to say that because he's a pioneer of hip-hop and rap, and he's gone along with that. So he's going to, of course, justify what's going on. And furthermore, I hadn't seen too many rappers coming out and saying, you know, maybe I'm going to stop using that word. I'm going to change my lyrics, you know, like Paul Mooney did when Michael Richards had his little tirade at the Laugh Factory, you know, a couple of months ago. I haven't heard that. So I think some people need to really look at themselves and make a change. You know, you can still make records and sell records without degrading people and doing all of that. And I think that's the overall larger discussion of what's going on in hip-hop today, the state of hip-hop, and why people are really unhappy with it and discouraged with it, and why after 30 years of being at the top of the charts, it's suddenly not at the top. Because all of this that we're talking about today is a factor in it. And people are beginning to think, you know, what's happened? Why isn't this fun? I mean, Jerry Heller said that when I interviewed him, that rap and hip-hop no longer was fun, you know, once Suge Knight and Death Row and all the violence and stuff got into the whole thing and sort of changed everything. So I think this is a big discussion, and I don't have the solution, but I think at least we are having the right discussion that something has to change, you know? We just can't continue to go with the status quo and think everything is okay, and then when something happens, everybody gets upset about it. So I think, you know, if people are realistic, maybe you can take a step personally and decide, maybe I'm not going to buy this anymore if this artist keeps doing this, or maybe I'm not going to listen to this radio talk show because I don't agree with the views of this particular person. Maybe I won't buy that product because they are advertisers on the show that I don't agree with. So I think we have to begin to exercise our own opinion, watch how we spend our money, and listen to what people say. And then when it's time to speak up, speak up. I mean, Al Roker, I think people were surprised because he's usually kind of an, you know, easygoing guy, but he was in an uproar about this whole thing and immediately called for him to fire. And it got and brought it home because I think people were thinking or saying, you know, he could be saying that about my daughter. He could be saying that about my niece. He could be saying that about my cousin. He could be saying that about my mom, my sister. I mean, that is what this is all about. Very interesting. So I'm hoping that everybody at least weighs in a little bit and looks at maybe what they can do individually for their part to help bring a shift and a change to some of this bad stuff that's going on today. Oh, God, I couldn't believe this. In Toronto, a woman ordered a sofa. It was delivered to her Brampton home, and she was stunned to see on the packing label describing the shade as nigger brown. I mean, I can't believe it. And she's holding up the packing label that was apparently on the furniture that was shipped to her house. And again, like, where did that come from? And gee, as far as I know, you know, that's not a color. Brown is a color, you know? And once she tried to deal with the issue and find out how this happened, everybody's passing the buck, because it gets back to the whole issue that it's okay to say this about a particular group and people of color because, they're less than. No, it's not. Again, because if it was something written about Jews on that packing slip, it would be an uproar. It would be an uproar. There'd be apologies up the wazoo, and there'd be return phone calls, okay? But because it's African American, people think, eh, it's no big deal. I'll pass the buck. I'll pass the blame. And frankly, I think if I were her, I would take the couch back and get my money back and get another couch. And that's the way that she could send a message to the place where she bought the furniture that this is not acceptable. I hope she doesn't keep it. I hope she sends it back, gets her money back, and moves on. But yeah, I mean, you know, these kind of affronts happen all the time, and you just never know where they're going to come from. So we've got to be vigilant and stop all of this craziness, this nonsense. Oh, my God, what's the thing? Dave Chappelle was at the Laugh Factory, and he stayed on stage for 6 hours. He showed up unannounced to do a set at 10:30 and got off the stage at 4:43 on Monday. And it was just, you know, the owner of the Laugh Factory said it was just one of those nights. And Chappelle made fun of Jamie Masada's Michael Richards' decision to impose a fine on any comic who uses the N-word on stage. Well, apparently he used it quite a bit and was fined $2,200 for his multiple use of the N-word for 6 hours. But my point is, you know, why did he even have to do that? And we know that he's a little off the rocker a little bit, because, you know, he walked away from a $50 million contract with the Comedy Channel, so he's a little off anyway. But again, why would you keep perpetuating this? You know, isn't that what Paul Mooney was talking about? That Michael Richards cured him of using that word. But I also thought it was kind of interesting that he got up on the stage and did a comedy routine for 6 hours. That's pretty incredible. Looks like our girl Gladys Knight is getting the Ella Award for being just a great singer and a great humanitarian. And it was it's the 16th award, and was named after jazz legend Ella Fitzgerald. So kudos to Gladys Knight, because, you know, I can't believe she's 62, but she's been around for so long, since she was a child singing. It's hard to think of her as being that old, but yeah, I can't believe it. And kudos for her, because she's, you know, one of these divas that has a great voice and has been around for quite some time, and we're just thrilled about that. Oh, I saw something in the paper about Richard Gere, which I thought was really, really funny in one sense, that he was in India promoting HIV and the whole prevention of that with truck drivers and things like that. And there was a Bollywood actress there, and he, you know, he kissed her hand initially, which probably would have been just fine. But no, he took it upon himself to go further. So then he kisses her on each cheek, and then he just grabs her and bends her over back and kisses her on the cheek. And, you know, again, arrogant Americans, because in that culture, you know, outward affection like that is taboo. And so what happened, they're like burning effigies of Richard Gere and effigies of this Bollywood actress who just said, oh my God, it was just too much. So she was kind of insulted and appalled that he did that too. But again, you know, we Americans have to be very careful, and we need to respect the cultures of countries where we are, because, you know, this could have been horrible. They could have, you know, killed her, or worse yet, harmed him, because they were personally insulted that he didn't respect their traditions and how they do things. So, you know, we Americans gotta respect the places that we go. We just can't do everything that we want to do and think it's okay, or that everybody's going to think it's okay. I mean, they could have killed him after that. It seemed like a silly thing to us, but not to them. It's absolutely, absolutely insane. But anyway, I digress for a moment. But I just thought that was very interesting to touch on. So in any event, I think that's it for now. Keep tuning in, keep passing the podcast around, and, you know, if you have some reflections on some of the things I'm talking about, continue to send me your comments, because I love hearing from you. In any event, we're going to count down. We've got 2 more podcasts till we reach the magic number of 60. That's going to be pretty incredible. So in any event, Digital Sister signing out. I will be back with you in just a few days. Have a great week.
See, I'm gonna be busting out.